welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. It has been quite some time since we recorded, but that's just how it's going to go. I think we're going to try to get these out every month. I said that before, but I think this is going to be it. This is going to be the start of the... No, it's not. With me is my co-host and my good buddy, Rob Fleck O'Hare. What's going on, Rob?
Hey, nothing, man. How you doing? I think it should be. This is the start. We're getting back in the groove. You know, it's summertime. Things are slowing down, but it just shifts. You know what I mean? Instead of taking the kids to school and whatever, now it's taking them to sleepovers and never stops, man, as an adult, you know?
Yeah, no, it doesn't stop. You get little breaks here and there, but there's always something to fill that time up. But so what's going on with you? I mean, we haven't... What the heck was... Love Boat was our last episode. We did that with Ferg.
Wow. And I
think we recorded that in, like, March, maybe?
Yeah, February? I think so. And, you know I think I mentioned on that episode that I got all the episodes of Love Boat, and that was one of my... one of my many challenges to myself, like, I'm going to watch every episode. Made it about halfway through season two.
Yeah, and how many seasons are there?
9 seasons. I mean, there are over 100 episodes. And after a while, they just start seeming kind of very similar.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that happens with a lot of the 80s shows.
Yeah. So that tailed off. Let's see. What's up with me? Oh, I just finished this semester of school a couple of weeks ago.
That's awesome.
I got an A on my novel writing class. You know, I had to write 50,000 words in 4 months, which is not really novel length. That's a little bit short of a novel, I'm talking to... Of course, I'm the oldest guy in there. You know what I mean? So it's... You know, when I didn't realize, you know, we talk about retro stuff on this show, and you and I are into old things, you know, Love Boat and all these old references, but you don't really realize how old some of them are until you're sitting in a classroom. There were 9 people in there. Most of them were in their early 20s. And so, you know, I would constantly just make these references to things. And you know, I mean, if you mentioned Love Boat, they would just have no idea. They never even heard of it, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. Christopher Tupa, he's part of the network, TupaCast. He's done the artwork for not only this show, but he did the artwork for my Average Runner podcast. He got a hold of me. He had listened to the episode, and he's like, I never saw any of the Love Boats before. He's a little bit young. Wow. He's a little bit younger than us. I don't think too much.
Yeah. But. Well, I think we were pretty young when that was on, you know. But I do remember, especially like during the summer, you know, like catching it on the weekends or something. You know, this is funny. Yeah, speaking of the summer, and my kids are out already for summer. Your kids are still in school for a couple more weeks, is that right?
Yeah, a few more weeks they have.
So anyway, my kids got out last week, and so my dad came over to visit over the weekend. And, you know, we were talking about what are the kids going to do for the summer. And they're like, oh, man, I have all this time now to play PlayStation 4. And, you know, I want to work on my computer stuff and this and that. And I was like, man, that sounds like a terrible summer, you know. And I broke into like old man mode. You know, I was like, man, when I was a kid, we played in the creek. We played in my backyard and all this. And then. Right after that, my dad did it to me. He was like, the creek, when I was a kid, we would get on our bikes and go all the way downtown Chicago and all, you know what I mean? And so it just made me laugh. It made me think, I wonder if every generation thinks like, you know, their childhood is the best. Like, that's what they're nostalgic about. Like, I was just trying to think, like, what would our kids, like, when they are our age, what are the great memories they're going to have of the summers, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they have their fun, but I think we are probably the last generation where you got outside a lot more. But then again, maybe not. I mean, we had the Ataris and stuff like that, but I did play a lot on that, but we did play outside all the time.
Oh, and now yeah,
it's
man.
Like, do you have to go through that thing where you have to like tell your kids to go outside and play?
Oh, make them.
Yeah, make them go outside.
Yeah, we have to set up play dates. You know, like we'll say, hey, you know, you need to call your friends, see if you can go spend the night with them or have your buddy. Like, you have to coordinate things for, you know, like like arrange play times and stuff. And yeah, I was just, you know, I was making fun of him earlier. I was like, you know, when my kid's 30, he'll be like, oh, remember that summer where we played Pokemon? Like, I mean, my kids have bikes and they ride to the end of the street and come back because they're afraid they're going to be abducted or, you know, I mean, it's just different times. So I don't know. I think nostalgia, you know, for me is not just the great memories, you know, from my personal childhood, but I feel like a connection to that whole era. Like, I just feel like, and maybe everybody feels this way, but I feel like, you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s was like the best time, you know?
Oh yeah. I definitely feel the same. I mean, that's why we do this podcast, you know? I don't have as fond of memories for a lot of these films that when we watch them again, but I still like to go back and visit them. You know, it's just takes you back to that time of being a kid. And yeah, I think the 80s were great to live through. But I've mentioned this on the show before. I don't want them to come back. You know, as far as styles and stuff like right, that. Like you were like, no way, man. I like the big puffy hair. And
if they came back, we're like, you know what? We're bringing back parachute pants. I don't know. I don't know if they would offer them in adult sizes, but I would be all over that. I'm like, you know what? I sign my kids up for keytar lessons.
Oh man,
I would bring them back. And you know what? What's funny is I've been spending some time like going through and ripping all my DVDs, you know, and putting them on my media server. And you know, I have like, DVDs that I bought over the last 3 or 4 years, and I'll look at them and go, oh, I remember watching that movie, but I don't want to watch it again. But when I see movies that we grew up with, you know, and I'm like, well, it's already there on the hard drive. Might as well just give it a double click, you know, and I'll sit there even like when I'm working from home. And today I was working from home and I put on Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and I wasn't even watching it, you know. I mean, it was just in the background, just listening to
right.
it. But I don't know. It's just those movies that take you back, man. I love it.
Yeah, I do. I do that a lot. I do that with Murder, She Wrote and stuff. Like if I'm getting tired, I'll put one on. It's like, I'm going to fall asleep, but I don't know. It's just something, I just like to have it on. Like you said, for like a background noise or something.
Well, that's what happened with the season 2 of The Love Boat. That's kind of why I stopped, because I was watching them at night. And so that whole second season, I saw the first half of all these episodes.
Yeah, you don't know how it ended.
You doze off. We're old. We fall asleep now. But, well, speaking of retro movies from the 80s and movies, at least that I grew up with, I don't know if this is one you saw in the 80s, but this week we are talking about War Games.
Yes. I actually saw this. There's a handful of movies that I know exactly that I know that I saw in the theaters. And this is one that I specifically remember seeing in the theaters. And then of course on HBO, afterwards, a handful of times here and there kind of catching it. But, there's a handful of movies like E.T., War Games. Yeah. Obviously Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, I believe Star Wars, the New Hope I saw on TV originally, but, so yeah, this stands out. And what was this, 83?
Yep.
Yeah, 83. So I was 9 years old. So yeah, it was a scene specifically always came to my mind. And it's the flying pterodactyl scene. We'll talk about that after. But
yeah,
like that is the scene that always stands out that I remember seeing at the theater. Because at 9 years old, I was like, what the hell is going on? There's flying pterodactyls here now?
I still want one of those things.
Yeah.
Not a real one. But yeah, that model thing you had. Well, I wrote a quick summary, and I've got some movie facts here. So I guess I'll start off with that. If you haven't seen War Games, it stars David Lightman. which is played by Matthew Broderick. He's a computer hacker who likes to play games. And while using his home computer and modem to search for online systems to play games on, he accidentally connects to a government system known as the Whopper, a machine designed to run World War III simulations, and which also has the ability to launch real nuclear missiles, which in retrospect seems like a bad idea. Will David and his girlfriend Jennifer be able to convince the military officials that it's all a simulation before the computer starts World War III? You will find out in the 1983 technical thriller War Games. I guess it's a technical thriller. There's a lot of computer stuff, a lot of technology in this movie.
Yeah, so speaking of all that stuff, was that real stuff, like real computer type stuff, or was it just kind of like movie, you know, thrown together kind of things? Because you are like the computer guy. I mean, you have a, you know, podcast dedicated to it. You've written books and stuff. Like, to me, it all looks the same. I mean, was that like you know TRS? I don't know what the hell.
You know, TRS-80, sure. Yeah, well, we're going to talk a little bit later about David Lightman's computer, and what he was doing as far as dialing and looking for computers to connect to was totally real. In fact, there's a term for that, which is called war dialing, which was named after this movie, War Games. That's where it gets its name from, war dialing. But and I'm sure there were government computers designed to run simulations and things like that. But I have read that the Whopper was not a real computer. It was made out of plywood and painted with a bunch of lights.
With lots of lights, because that makes it look important when they do like complete wraparound of it with all these little red and yellow lights.
Yeah. And there's a trivia fact that's been floating around probably since this movie came out, but I've since read that maybe it's not true, so I'm not sure anymore. But I read that NORAD actually had a war system like this called Burger, B-U-R-G-R. And so that in the movie, Whopper was a play on the fact that the real one was called Burger. But now I've since read that they didn't have one called Burger, so I don't know if
that's called Mac.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but let's see. War Games had a budget of $12 million, and I think a lot of that went into the NORAD set that we'll talk about, and it grossed $80 million, so it was a big success. It was just under 2 hours long. It was directed by John Badham, who directed Saturday Night Fever, Blue Thunder, then War Games, and then after that he did Short Circuit, Stakeout, and Bird on a Wire. I'm sure he did other things too, but those are the ones that jumped out at me as far as 70s and 80s.
It definitely has that feel like Short Circuit.
Yes.
They're very similar in that. Yeah. And it's I don't recall Blue Thunder. It sounds familiar, but I don't think I saw it. And Stakeout, that was the Richard Dreyfuss and Emilio Estevez, wasn't it, Stakeout?
Yes, it is, yeah. It was written by Lawrence Lasker and Walter Parks, who also wrote Sneakers from 1992. Have you seen that?
Is that the hacker one or something?
Yes, it's very, it's very kind of
Angelina similar. Jolie, is she in that one, Sneakers, or no?
No, that's Hackers.
That is Hackers.
Sneakers is the one that has Robert Redford, who else is Dan Aykroyd, and it's the group of guys, and basically they find a box that can break all encryption, and so it's and at the very beginning they are making a living by basically being a red team. They are breaking into banks and then telling people, you know, how they broke in, that sort of thing.
Right.
But there's a great line in that movie where they find this box and they figure out what it is, and it's basically a unencryption key. So this is really kind of predicts the future, you know. And the one guy says, you know, there isn't a government on the planet that wouldn't kill us all for that thing, which is probably true,
right?
If you found something like that. So another type of technical thriller. 1985, this was the fifth highest grossing movie. It was behind Well, I put the list here so I can't have you guess, but number one was obviously Return of the Jedi. Terms of Endearment was number two, which is a surprise. Flashdance, which I did not see until probably 3 years ago.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, it was just not, I mean, as a kid, I was like, yep, I get it. She dances and they put water on her. Not interesting to me. Not at 10 years old. Trading Places, which is Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, right?
Yep.
That's a good movie. And then we have War Games, and then there's a few other ones on here. Octopussy, Sudden Impact, Staying Alive, Mr. Mom, and 10th was Risky Business, which is another one I didn't see until I was an adult.
Yeah, same with me. I think I was probably a late teenager when I had seen that. I'm not really into that movie at all. I don't know if it's Tom Cruise or what it is, because there's what's the one episode 100 I promised Steve Cherubino I would do. Top Gun.
Yeah.
I didn't care for that movie either. So I don't know if it's him or what.
Yeah, he was definitely Weasley in the 80s. Another sign of things to come. Roger Ebert gave War Games 4 out of 4 stars, and it currently has a rating of 93% approval on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a lot higher than the sequel, which we'll talk about later. Sequel's terrible.
Sequel?
Let's get in. Oh, we're not even going to talk about it. We don't want to tarnish the reputation of War Games.
Oh, wow. I can't wait till we get to that.
Oh, my gosh. Three words for you. Direct to DVD. It's pretty bad. So I wrote down some of the main cast, and I know that when we talked earlier, you remembered some other people. So we'll go through the main ones, and then I think you've got some other ones to throw out. But stars Matthew Broderick as David Lightman. War Games was his second movie. And let's see what else. Oh, obviously he is known for Ferris Bueller, Project X. Do you remember that one where they were going to send
the
chimpanzee? Yeah, and he had to save it. It was going to go in outer space. Biloxi Blues, Godzilla, Inspector Gadget. That was terrible.
That was just on the other day. I was flipping around and I was like, this is absolutely horrendous.
Yep, it was bad. We have his girlfriend, Jennifer, who was played by Ally Sheedy, who I was totally in love with in the 80s. War Games was also her second film. We see her in Breakfast Club, St. Elmo's Fire, and she's also in Short Circuit. That's probably the connection, you know, the director connection with Short Circuit. Ally Sheedy, man.
Yeah. Doesn't do nothing for me.
Oh, my goodness. More for me.
There you go.
You know what? She's more of the computer guy type anyways.
Is that right?
I'm sure if I rattle off a few quotes from War Games, she'll be over just like that.
I'm sure.
We have McKittrick, who's Dabney Coleman. And of course, Dabney Coleman is famous for being Jack Flack. In Cloak and Dagger, which you guys covered before I even came on, on the show.
I believe that you and I actually we started doing an episode one time, and then it turned into our Schlosh cast, I think it was, where we were on a hangout for about 6 hours and we were totally trashed.
Yeah, that was a bad experience.
I still have all the files for that.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that'll be in the you know, we'll have to do a Kickstarter, raise some money. let's see, Dabney Coleman was in 9 to 5. He was in Tootsie. He was on the Mary Hartman Show.
I was telling Nicole last night, we were watching this a little bit, and I was like, you know, he is definitely probably my favorite actor of the 80s. I really like him and everything I've
seen. Dabney Coleman?
Yeah. Even when he plays that slimy, like in 9 to 5, the slimy boss and stuff. I don't know. There's just something about him. I like his acting, and
he seems really like an approachable kind of, you know what I mean? Like a cool uncle, you know what I mean? Like just an adult, but not, imposing,
right?
You know? So, yeah, yeah, I like Dabney Coleman. You know, and after he did Jack Flack, he could do no wrong in my eyes anyway. So, we got General Barringer, who is played by Barry Corbin. He's the pro-military guy. He's all for he's kind of for World War III, it seems like, at times. He was in No Country for Old Men. He was the warden in Stir Crazy. Did you ever see that? That was
no.
Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder. That was a that's a good movie. He was in Northern Exposure. He's been in a million.
Yeah, things. That's what I remember from the most was Northern Exposure. I love that show. Mm. Got the yeah, got the box set. Show.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How many seasons? I mean, was that it was on for a long time?
Yeah, it was on for quite a while. Don't I mean I don't know exactly how many seasons. I haven't watched it in a while, but yeah. Nicole and I used to watch that when I worked the midnight shift. I'd come home and they play like 4 or 5 episodes on TBS. So
I remember that was one of those that was like in syndication, you know, it was always,
yeah,
always on late at night. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got Falcon. He's the computer guy who programmed, the Whopper. He programmed Joshua, which was named after his son who passed away. He was played by John Wood. He's, in another one of my favorite computer movies from the '80s, Jumpin' Jack Flash. That was the Whoopi Goldberg, movie where, she's, gets on her computer random chats from a guy that turns out to be a spy, and so she is working to basically save his life, and he was the spy that came in at the end. And it said that when they wrote that role, they had John Lennon in mind. That, and I think John Lennon was already and this was a movie that was developed over a long period of time, so I don't know if John Lennon was still alive when they were working on the original script or not, but he's supposed to be that kind of character.
Yeah, I could see how he would fit well in that.
Yeah, and then the last two that I wrote down were Melvin and Jim. They're the two computer nerds that David Lightman goes and sees for advice. You know, Eddie, I didn't write anything down, but Eddie Deason is, of course, very well known. I know him from Grease. He's Eugene the Nerd and Grease. And
1941.
Yes, yes.
Where he's stuck up in the Ferris wheel, basically the whole movie with the older guy, and then and a mannequin or something, right? Or
yeah. And yeah, Jim has one of the my favorite lines in the movie when David asks him about the back door, and Melvin starts explaining what a back door is, and he says, "Mr. Potato Head, Mr. Potato Head," yells at him. Anyway, in the opening scene, you said there were a couple people you recognized.
Yeah, I mean there's actually quite a few other people throughout the movie. We have Strickland from Back to the Future.
Right.
Was it James Tolkien? I think it was. I thought it was. Well, I think it's Michael Madsen. Isn't that his name?
Yeah. Reservoir Dogs?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had his name wrong. I thought it was, I was thinking of Sizemore, but no, it's Michael Madsen, who was, yeah, in Reservoir Dogs. He's the one who cuts the policeman's ear off.
Oh, yeah.
John Spencer was his partner when they came in, and he's been on a ton of TV. West Wing is what he's probably pretty well known for, as being on the West Wing. And I can't find who the other guy, the guy who let them actually in with the glasses, but you, I mean, people would know exactly when they see it if you look.
And these were probably like all unknown people at that time,
I would imagine, because Michael Madsen, you know, seems fairly young.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't find who the other guy is. But yeah, I mean, just peppered in, there was some other people. I think one of the guys' name was like, I don't know, it was Stu or something. He's the guy who is leading at NORAD the group that was there on tour.
Oh, the tour thing. Yeah,
he was leading them, and he actually was the guy who was, I think, getting ready to push the button when he was told. I've seen him from Murder, She Wrote just a few weeks ago. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's cool when you watch these movies and you haven't seen them in a long time, and then you go, oh my God, I know that person.
You know, this movie opens up. You were just talking about a scene where two guys walk into a missile silo, and they're being tested to see if human beings would follow the command to launch missiles, you know. And so that's what the Whopper is a computer that's designed to take the human beings out of the missile launching process. When I started watching this movie, I had completely forgotten about that scene.
Yeah, so I
was like, is this War Games? What's going on, you know? And what's funny is my family and I went on vacation a couple of years ago to North Dakota, and we got to go to the Missile Man silo. So we got to go down like underground where those guys sat in real life. And it looks just like War Games. I mean, it's the same key. It's all the same stuff that was there, you know? So when I saw it in the movie, I was like, oh yeah, now I remember. But yeah, when I fired it up, I forgot all about that.
Yeah. That scene did not seem familiar to me at all, but I'll tell you what, I thought that was probably one of the best scenes in the movie. I loved it.
Yeah. It's very, you know, tense. And of course, those guys don't know it's a test, you know? And so, like I said, that when you watch this movie as an adult, you see that that's, you know, basically part of the setup for the movie, that, you know, that's why they want the Whoppers, because these guys under a crisis type of situation, that they wouldn't really launch the missiles.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like I said, I was watching it with my wife last night, and you know, she's on her tablet, but she's watching. So it's kind of one of those deals. And she's asking me, so, what, you know, who are they going to launch these missiles at? And because she had never seen it before. And I'm like, all right, well, what's 1983? I'm like, oh, that's the Russians, you know, it's the Russians. But right. I don't want to ruin that. So this is just a, you know, a test to see if they'll go through with it. And then, you know, Michael Madsen pulls a gun out and he's like, you know, put the key in or whatever. And she's like, is he really going to shoot him? I'm like, yeah. I mean, I go, these aren't just like privates they pull out of boot camp and go, oh, you're going to push this button when we, you know, there's a whole system of what they have to go through. And if, you know, if a guy isn't going to go through with what he's, you know, trained to do, then the other one's got to take care of him and do everything himself.
Turn your key, sir. Yeah, that's a great scene. You said that you remember seeing this in the movie theater.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, I saw it. I remember that I saw it at the drive-in. There's a lot of movies during that time, so I'd have to look up, you know, the exact, like, I know that I saw Tron at that same drive-in. I know that I saw Star Trek II at that same drive-in, but I don't really remember, like, you know, was this on the same night as that or whatever. You know, I don't remember if we saw it, because usually they'd show like two or three movies, but I definitely remember seeing this at the drive-in, and this was a huge impact on my life. And I'll tell you, just one of the things I noted down is, a couple of things is, right around the time when I saw this is when we first got a modem for our computer, which at that time would have been, our Apple II. And so you had to pick an alias, you know, for online. And so I picked Robbie Lightman. You know, I just changed my last name to Lightman, because David Lightman in War Games, and everybody was like, dude, don't use your real name. I'm like, it's not my real name. It's like the guy in War Games. They're like, that's a terrible alias. So I did that for a year until Cloak and Dagger came out, and then I changed it to Jack Flack. But in War Games, there's a couple of scenes where David Lightman is wearing a green T-shirt, like a Fruit of the Loom T-shirt with a pocket, you know, and then a blue hoodie on over it. I still have that outfit. I mean, I have a green Fruit of the Loom shirt with a pocket and a blue hoodie, and that's why, you know. And so, when I was a kid, like, that's who I want. You know, I didn't want to dress like, you know, the rock stars or whoever I saw. Like, I wanted to dress like the computer people that I saw in movies. So, you know, when he had his little, like, his button-down shirt with the rolled-up sleeves and stuff like that, like, that's who I wanted to be like. You know, I wanted to be like David Lightman.
Well, you know, the scene where he takes Ally Sheedy back to his house and he can go into the computer because he gets the password, which he knows where the passwords are. So he obviously, it seems as if he intentionally is getting himself sent to the vice principal's office or something, so that he can go and get the password that they, what does he say? They change it like every 2 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's pencil is the password. It's
yeah.
I know. I mean, this movie was such a big part. You know, I mean, pencil is obviously a bad password. For a while, when I first started calling BBSs, my password was CPE1704TKS, which is the launch code from the missiles at the end of the movie. So, I mean, I'm not lying. This movie was a big impression on me.
Oh, well, that leads me to this question, though. So that part, they go back to his house, and he is able to connect his phone to a modem, dial into the school, use the password, and then kind of alter the grades. And as we're watching that, you know, again, I'm watching with my wife, and she's kind of, like I said, and the reason I said she was on her tablet, it's kind of that thing where, you know, when your kids are in the room watching TV, and but they're on their phone or tablets, and then they're asking you a million questions, and you're just like,
right,
a movie.
You're like, well, if you'd have been watching.
Yeah, so she asked me a few questions, and I said, and you can plead the fifth on this, or you can answer however you want. But I said, well, this is what Rob used to do. This is, and she's like, really? I'm like, yeah, that's what Rob used to do. Because his first intentions after that was to try to connect to a game manufacturer, right? And get to their website and then get the plans for the game so he could, I don't know, maybe
download the games early.
I'm like, well, this is what Rob used to do. And she's like, really? I'm like, yeah. And then I'm like, I don't know, maybe he didn't do this.
I will not even plead the fifth. I will tell you, that's absolutely what we used to do. I mean, everything from now, I didn't, you know, almost start World War III or anything like that. And to be honest with you, it wasn't in real life. It wasn't as exciting as it is in war games, you know, but I got my own phone line really early on because, you know, you had to connect your computer to the phone line, and my parents got tired of picking up the phone and hearing me, you know, like,
when your parents picked up your phone, cause I know my brother, he had a modem for the Commodore 64. I want to say it was a tape deck modem. Does that make sense for this Commodore 64 or no?
No, it'd be two different things,
but there was something with the phone line.
Yeah, that would be the modem.
Okay, and I know, like, if someone were to pick up the phone, he'd get all pissed off because then it would, like, make it would
usually it'd hang up.
Yeah, it would lose his connection.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so, and also, I mean, this was back before call waiting.
Mm-hmm.
So the phone would be busy, you know, so you'd be tying up the phone all night. So my parents got my sister and I our own phone line. So at night we would split it like an hour. Like I would get it from 4 to 5. She would get it from 5 to 6. But when we would go to school during the day, I would set my computer up to either download stuff or, you know, try to call phone numbers and find computers just like David Lightman was doing. Now, I never found game companies and I never found, you know, the Whopper or the Burger or whatever. But, you know, we found things like we found banks. And when you would connect to it, it would say something, something bank. But usually those things didn't have any menu system, you know, so you just randomly hit keys and it would hang up or something. We found a, I think it was Pizza Hut. It was a pizza, you know, where you would basically what they would do is there were computers at the other offices where they would dial in at night and punch in like the nightly totals and things like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we were so excited. I was like, oh, there's got to be a way to order pizza.
Yeah.
You know, but there were the big thing back then that would really get you in trouble was trying to get around paying your phone bill. And that was definitely something that that I would probably have to plead the fifth on on some of that stuff. But that's what and what was I don't know. I guess you could say entertaining or scary, depending on your opinion or, you know, how you look at it. But as adults now, I mean, we were all doing that stuff and we were 10, 11, 12 years old, you know. So like my parents were in the other room. They had no idea what I was doing. You know, are you having fun on your computer? You're like, yes, Mom. And then you're like, all right, Pizza Hut, give me some pizza. You know.
So oh, he's just in there printing another banner to sell at school to one of the kids.
That's true, yeah. No, I did that on my dad's printer, so I wouldn't use all my
ink.
But
you talk about that on one of your You Don't Know Flack episodes.
It's true. There was a hacker group called the Milwaukee 414s that got busted right after War Games came out. And one of the things they got, they arrested a kid for breaking into his own school computer, just like on War Games, you know. And he got arrested, and they took him down to – there was a story about this in a magazine I had when I was a kid. And they arrested him for breaking into the school. And so they took him down to book him, you know. And they were like, well, what are you being charged for? And he said, breaking into the school's computer. And they said, oh, well, you know, did you – you know, breaking and entering or whatever? And he said, no, I was over the computer. And they were like, is that – not legal? Like, they didn't even know how to charge somebody for that, you know? So that it was right. Really the kids and the technology were moving faster than, you know, the laws and the police. I mean, I never worried about downloading games or whatever, because who cares? Like, they're not going to come arrest you for downloading Pac-Man, you know? But when you started messing around with the phone company or, I mean, I never did credit card stuff, but there were a lot of people that dabbled in credit card stuff online or whatever. And I mean, they would bust you bad for that. So yeah, I definitely steered clear of that. I was more the fun, mischievous, entertained child, not the bad one. But, let's see what else is in War Games. You know, there's that famous scene, in the beginning, you know, right before David goes to school, he's late because he is playing Galaga. And he's in the arcade, which is across the street from his school. That arcade is really, it was called 20 Grand Palace. It was in California. The movie takes place in Seattle, but obviously they did filming in California. I paused that scene when I was watching it to try to see all the machines that are in there. I saw, I'm not going to read them all, but there was Jungle Hunt, Pac-Man, Asteroids, Centipede, Zaxxon. I mean, I love that scene. That is a great representation of, you know,
Tron was in the background, yeah, by the door.
Yeah, yeah. You can see Satan's Hollow in there. I mean, a classic, you know, 80s arcade. And there's a song playing, I never knew how the song went. All I knew was that little part of the chorus where it says, "We're living in the shade of a video arcade." And I looked it up. It's by a band called the Beepers. I didn't know that. I never knew who did that.
I don't even remember it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, and you know, it's one of those things where, I found the song on YouTube and listened to it. And most of the song's not even like that. It's just that one little,
it's just that little section hook, that they play. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. There's like all these kids there and, you know, they're at the concession stand. Like, you ordered a French fry and a Coke. And then next thing you know, he's checking his time on his little digital watch and he's late for school.
Yeah, and he turns his game over to the other kid. Now, you know, this is a well-known trivia fact, but when they were filming this movie, they put a Galaga machine in Matthew Broderick's trailer so that he would play it all the time and get good at the game, so that whenever they shot that scene, you know, that he would be able to play the game.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. I think I remember reading that he got to keep the machine too. I don't know. I'd have to look that up, but yeah. So then he goes to school. We have all this school stuff. And oh, like you said, the stuff at his house, he has, it is a IMSA or MSAI, IMSAI 8080 computer, which I had never seen one in real life until a couple of years ago. We went to the Computer History Museum in San Francisco, and I never knew anybody with that kind of computer. But when I saw it in the museum, I'm like, oh, it's a War Games machine. Like, I got all excited, you know. And he had that little speaker thing that made it talk, which, of course, I only knew one person who had anything like that, and it wasn't I don't think it sounded as good as the one in the movie, you know, but when you're doing a movie, obviously you can't just have people reading the screen for an hour.
Right.
It has to have a voice, you know, so.
Yeah, it was that thing where he was reading, you know, saying out loud what he was typing, so you right. knew what the conversation was going to be.
Shall we play a game? I think when I first got on the internet, I mean, like 95, late 95, early 96, and people would put up websites with just like WAV files, and they're terrible quality. And you would always see like the little WAV files from War Games, you know.
War Games.
Yeah, you make that your AOL email notification.
So we'll move along a little bit because I feel like we could probably talk a long time about this movie. You could really geek out to this, I can tell. But you know, when he's doing the change in the grades and he's looking for that company. Do you remember the name of the company? It doesn't really matter, but that he was trying to get the game from.
Was it Spectravision? I think that might have been what it was.
Yeah, he saw it in a magazine when he was eating dinner with his parents.
Right. Yeah. I want to play those games.
They were totally disconnected, the family, yeah. You know. I did learn one cool thing. When you want to put butter on your corn, instead of trying to spin it on the stick of butter, just put a ton of butter on a piece of bread and then like wrap around your corn. Just make sure you cook it first.
You know, it's weird that they make his parents in this movie weirdos. Or that the mom is weird for, like, no reason. Like, there's no payoff for that later.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I mean, when she's like, oh, she serves up corn on the cob that's raw.
Yeah, that scene, I mean, even though I like it because I learned a little trick about buttering my corn, but I was like, what the hell was the point of this other than to just show that he's just so, you know, distant from his parents that he does his own thing and locks his room? I mean, who puts a lock on their door in their bedroom?
Yeah, that would make you. It's funny that the same person, Matthew Broderick, played David Lightman. And then a couple of years later, he plays Ferris Bueller. And they're both that rebellious kind of person, but they are two ends of the spectrum. You know what I mean? Ferris Bueller is the outgoing, charismatic, wins everybody over. And David Lightman.
He's a righteous dude.
And David Lightman just wants to go to his room. You know, I mean, he impresses the one girl by changing her grade, you know, and smarts off to his teacher, makes one of the best jokes about who first suggested, what is it, asexual reproduction?
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah, your wife.
Yeah. But as he's doing this, he stumbles upon the Whopper, right? Basically, mm-hmm. And this series of games that Whopper has built into it,
right.
Which leads us to him playing Global Thermal Nuclear War,
right? I mean,
which he thinks is a game, and they're sitting back, kicking back with their tab.
Oh, they think it's hilarious.
Yeah, their tab drinks and their you know, having the best time of their life. And meanwhile, at NORAD, they're like, what is going on here?
Right. And so, eventually then Joshua was always, so he disconnects. He sees it on the news, right? He sees the news report and he's like, oh my gosh, you know, he realizes that he has done this. And so he, you know, unhooks his computer or whatever, or throws away the papers. And then the computer calls him back and reconnects, you know. And so eventually he does get picked up by, I don't know who that, the military or whatever. I guess that's supposed to be the FBI or something.
I think it was the FBI, yeah.
Yeah. And they take him up to the office, and we have Dabney Coleman, right, who's you know, giving him the third degree, and he's saying, why did you call back or whatever? And he says, oh, I didn't. Joshua called me. And he says, what? McKittrick, you know what? And he says, Joshua called me. And then McKittrick gets this look on his face and he goes, computers don't call people. And when I saw that this time, that made me laugh because computers call people every day now.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, we're in the election season and I get calls. I get probably 10 calls a day that's on the caller ID. It'll say, call from Oklahoma City. Okay. You know, because they spoof their caller ID, but computers call people all the time now, you know, but I guess that was revolutionary or whatever at the time. I don't know. That line just struck me as being funny, but you know, so what Matthew Broderick figures out is that, you know, these are war simulations and that the Whopper, you know, has been programmed to want to launch the missiles, you know, to start World War III. I mean, it realizes that or at that time, you know, it thinks it's being attacked, and so it's planning all this stuff. And so he, David Layman says, you know, the only way really to solve this is to go visit Falcon. So he discovers who wrote the computer system. He gets the password, which is Joshua. Which was not, I did not use as one of my passwords. I thought that would be bad. too many people would guess that. But
that's your Gmail password now.
And I put them together. It's Joshua Pencil. So then they go to the island. They spend all that time there. That's where the flying pterodactyl is. I don't know. What do you think about that whole the whole island part where they go to Falcon's house?
Well, the pterodactyl, like I said, that was for some reason that just really kind of stood out to me. Maybe because as a 9-year-old, I was like, whoa, what is, like, I didn't get what was going on. I mean, I honestly, as a 9-year-old, I didn't get what was going on to begin with, with most of this movie. You know, I didn't realize that, you know, what he was doing when he was dialing and stuff like that, trying to contact. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I mean, all that stuff was going on until I was older and watched it. But, I mean, I didn't like the character, but I know he was in, cause his, you know, when he finds out about this and he's trying to get in and he goes to, Eddie Deason's character and everything. And they're like, you gotta get the password. You gotta go from the beginning, the first, you know, the first game or whatever.
Falcon's Maze.
Yeah. And he, so after doing some research on microfiche and stuff like that, he finds out about about him and that it had a son and his son passed away. And so when they meet him, he's almost welcoming. Mm-hmm. He is pretty much welcoming the fact that, you know, the world is going to end. There's going to be a nuclear destruction.
Right. He's like, it's inevitable.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, he's trying to say, oh, well, you know, watch this movie of the dinosaurs again and the way that the Mother Nature will restart or whatever. And
right. Yeah. Because he compares it to the dinosaurs. And so, yeah, they do eventually, you know, they convince him like you would. Well, they don't convince him at first, but they plant the seed, you know, for him to come back in at the end. So eventually the helicopter picks them up. They go back to NORAD and
Hold on one second.
Yeah.
So I have a comment about this. So, and I know it's a movie and it's got to be dramatic and everything, but so they hear the helicopter coming, they see the helicopter with its spotlight and he's like, "Oh, he turned us in." You know, and the helicopter's like circling them, and then it finally lands, and then on a loudspeaker, he's like, "It's okay, get in." And I'm going, "Okay, could you have maybe done that without scaring the shit out of these kids?" Yeah. You know, like, was that fun for you? You know, you could have just told them that, like, when you're above them, like, "Hey, it's me. I'm going to land. We're going to go." Right.
Yeah. But no, yeah, no. Instead they think they're about to be killed, you know?
Yeah. They're thinking the FBI or whoever is, right, is onto them.
And then they get a good chuckle.
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, I scared those kids to death." But, yeah, so they go back and of course, now we got two problems. The first is, you know, Joshua, is trying to, you know, it's playing World War III. They can't get it to stop and all this. And then it figures out, oh, well, if I can just, you know, figure out the launch codes, because we have this little false ending where we're like, "Woo, everything's okay." But then they find out that, you know, Joshua has figured out if he can find the 10-digit random launch code, which I don't think would take very long. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's numbers and letters.
Was it 8 characters?
10
characters? Yeah. Yeah, you would think now it would be.
I mean, as fast, you know, like, as it, and the thing is, it's not like it's guessing the whole thing. I mean, as it gets one of them right, it locks in. So you think it would go really fast, you know? But so they come up with the idea. I mean, eventually they come up with the idea that you know, Falcon shows up and he and David Lightman are trying to think, and they figure out, well, what if you play it at tic tac toe, you know? And so they're trying to teach the computer that there are games where there is no winner. And so the comparison is, you know, tic-tac-toe, if you play it right, is always a tie, and there is no winner. And in nuclear war, there is no winner because both sides are going to, you know, experience great losses. And you know what? I just got chills on my leg just thinking about this scene. But the last scene where Joshua is playing itself in World War III and it's showing the casualties or whatever, that's, and I know this is dumb, that scene chokes me up. You know, when it's like the computer's learning and you know, it's seeing that there's going to be millions of casualties and it's doing it over and over. And I was like, I got emotional. Computer movies are sad sometimes.
That's all right. They had described this because in the beginning when they say, look, you got Dabney Coleman who's going, look, we got this computer system that can replace having actual humans in the silo where emotions aren't going to be taking place, right? And he's kind of arguing with the general Behringer, because Behringer's like, look, these are my men. I take responsibility, but they'll, you know, we'll find out where the weakness in the training is or whatever. And they're explaining like, look, this thing is constantly going over what simulating in itself, basically, all the steps of how to counter and stuff like that. So I don't know. I just thought that it would know already that there really is no outcome that anyone wins.
Right, right. Oh, and yeah, they get in that argument or whatever. What does Behringer say?
Oh, the line where he says, I'd piss on a spark plug if I thought it would help or something like that. I love that. I was like, that is just like a classic, like, you know, kind of, he's kind of a, I don't want to say a hillbilly, but, you know.
Right, and you know, he's definitely the military guy. He's the old school, you know. McKittrick is the new guy. He's like, oh, the computers are great, the computers will solve everything, you know. And I forgot exactly what he says at the end, but it's something like, you know, in my professional opinion, your computer sucks.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, McKittrick is basically, I guess, the computer guy, but maybe he doesn't know it as intricate as like maybe the guy in the lab that keeps coming out or something.
Right.
Or his Falcon, because you would think he would understand that this, because they're sending out warplanes to look and they're like reporting back going, look, we don't see any Russian planes or anything. Yeah. And, you know, maybe he would think like, yeah, something's going on. That's,
yeah,
not
I think
right.
of him as more like the manager over the IT people. You know what I mean? Like, he may not be the guy that really understands the technology, but
he worked with Falcon, because when Falcon came in, mm-hmm. they did know each other. It seemed like they didn't really care for each other, though.
Right, right. And yeah, maybe, you know, whenever he left. And of course, Falcon is like in the witness protection program now or whatever. I mean, he's disappeared.
Yeah,
you know,
because of security reasons, they gladly pretended he was dead.
When you're trying to lay low from other people, you know what a good idea is? To buy yourself a flying dinosaur and just fly it around. That will not raise any suspicions at all. Well, so of course at the end of the movie, Joshua does learn his lesson that there is no winning. And he says the only winning move is not to play, which is my opinion about tic-tac-toe. I know you have 3 children. I have 2 children. And there's nothing I hated more than going into a restaurant and seeing those little paper placemats, you know, with like 2 or 3 tic-tac-toe things on. You're like,
oh. And letting them win.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I forgot. I just picked all the corners. So this movie had a big impact on people, and on society, and on the box office. There were some war games, video games, there was one for Atari computers, one for the Commodore 64, and then the same game was also on the ColecoVision. But they weren't about the movie war games. It was about the actual World War III scenario stuff.
The game within the movie type of
thing? Yes, exactly. So it's all about, you know, so it's almost like the opposite of the movie. I mean, because the whole point of the movie says the only winning move is not to play. So you would think you wouldn't want to play the game. But the only winning move now is to buy our game where there's no winning move. But you know what? I looked at some gameplay stuff. I never played any of those. I mean, it's not the kind of game I would have played as a kid. I wanted, you know, more action kind of stuff.
Right.
In 2008, War Games 2, The Dead Code, was released on DVD. And I remember it came out right around the same time as the War Games 25th anniversary on DVD, which I bought both of them at the same time, I think. And War Games 2, The Dead Code is almost exactly the same movie. It is a guy and a girl, and the guy is hacking on his computer, and he hacks into a computer system. But this one is called Ripley, and of course it's like R.I. Just like the Whopper was. And it's like a computer that's used for spies or something. And so, at the end of it, they have the computer do all these things where it plays games and it learns that there's, I'm like, I just saw this movie. It was called War Games 1. So I don't know why they made the exact same movie again, except for the only difference is everybody in this movie is not likable. So it's really awful. I do not recommend it. It has a 25% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
I never heard of this thing.
Oh, you are lucky, my friend. The original War Games, like I said, it inspired war dialing. You know, if you've ever heard of people, you don't hear about it as much now, but there was a time where people would go around trying to find like Wi-Fi signals.
Uh-huh.
And it was called war driving. It's the same thing. The word war, it all comes from War Games. I mean, that's where that terminology comes from. But it also, so not only did it inspire kids, computer users, hackers, but it also, created this fear, this backlash against computers, from law enforcement and Congress. And in fact,
As far as a personal computer, like viewing it that way?
Yeah, because, there weren't laws on the books about calling somebody else's, calling another computer without permission or whatever. And so the Congress created the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act in 1984, and it was inspired because of this film, So there were... I don't know. I mean, it did have an effect on society in general. You know what I mean? Just, I don't think people thought of, there were early BBSs on the IBM PC that you call from one computer to another computer. And when you called, there wasn't even a password. It was just you connected to someone else's computer and you could send files back and forth. But you were like in DOS. You could just format their hard drive or something. There wasn't any security around computers back then because, there were so few people doing that stuff. It's like, who's going to randomly call a computer? Who's going to call, this is kind of a strange example, but, with things like the PlayStation and more modern consoles, there's a lot of copy protection built in, so you can't copy the games, But the early CD systems like the Amiga CD32, there wasn't any copy protection at all because nobody had CD-ROM burners. And if you did, blank CDs were like $10 or $15 each, it just didn't make sense. Why would you put copy protection in something when it costs almost as much to make a copy as it would to just buy the game, but then all of a sudden technology runs past that and then they have to play catch up, And so, the computer
and stuff, then you have to have these security suites
that
completely, annihilate your processor of doing anything because it's running 15 million different processes in the background to keep you quote protected.
Exactly. I mean, you had, the industry or whatever. I mean, you have these law enforcement guys in their 30s and 40s that have never used a computer. And then you have people like me and my friends who were, 12 years old, 13, 14, running rampant, who knew way more about computers than the adults did. So, I know there was a famous story about Kevin Mitnick, the hacker, who, it was rumored that he could launch missiles just like the Whopper, by calling a certain phone number and whistling the tones into the phone, which is, of course, ridiculous. And Kevin Mitnick will be the first guy to tell you that it's ridiculous. But when they arrested him on hacking charges, they put him in solitary confinement and refused to let him use a telephone for that reason. You know, so it was like
afraid of that.
Yeah. Cause so it's just that fear of them not understanding, you know, the technology as well as, I don't want to say the bad guys, but you know, the people that were obviously that did understand it.
Right. Yeah. There was, you know, as far as this movie and some of the things that happened that kind of stood out to me that I thought were interesting was, because I can't relate to all this computer type stuff. You know, I didn't get into computers, honestly. I mean, probably like 8 years ago, and it was out of necessity to have to try and fix my own computer that I roached. And I was on strike from my job, so I had no money to take it to get fixed. So, you know, my wife's kind of like, well, you better fix it.
Right, right.
And I was the one who screwed it up. So, but it was cool looking back at like when he needs to use the payphone and he's walking around and he sees a little pull tab, the old pull tabs from like the beer cans. And he starts to, I wonder how many, cause he starts pulling off the mouthpiece
right
on the payphone and then does like a little connection between that and the change where you put the change in on the phone to short it out or something to make the phone call. I got a kick out of that stuff. He uses his Walkman to copy the code when the security guard comes to unlock the room that he's staying in. They have him, you know, detained in. And like you said, with the whistling, he uses his Walkman and some like hemostats to record the playback, the code to get back in and then change that code.
Yeah. I read that the code, they wanted to show that the Walkman worked. And so I guess before they shot it, the director recorded his own voice where he was reading that medical transcription or whatever. So that's actually the director's voice that's on the tape whenever they, you know, he plays it and he tapes over that. The thing with the payphone, I never tried that, but I have read that did work, that taking the base of the head or the, you know, the mouthpiece off the phone and shorting it out, which is what he's doing, you know, with the metal pull tab worked. So there was a huge, of course, you can imagine after the movie came out, every teenager across America wanted to go try that, you know. And so what the phone company did to solve that was they basically went out, unscrewed all of those, and super glued the receivers back on so that you can't unscrew it on the payphones. So that was their solution to fixing that.
Well, when I was watching that, I was curious. I was like, I wonder how many payphones back then. And kids, if you're listening, a payphone, it was a little different than that thing you put in your back pocket.
Yeah. Do you know, I have a payphone.
Yeah. That really surprises me. That's a shocker.
Not only do I have a payphone, I have the big blue metal box that goes around it, you know, that says phone on the top, and the box part is out in the garage, but I bought a payphone and then modified it so you can hook it up in your house. So I have a working payphone. And again, that is not because I love payphones, but because I love that era. You know, I mean,
it's gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you hardly ever see a payphone anywhere. I mean, they still have them occasionally,
yeah,
but not like they used to. I mean, I remember, I'd say probably about 4 or 5 years ago when they took the one out of my work, and it was first they removed the phone. And it was just the metal box that said phone like right. Set on the side. And now then they took that out afterwards. And I thought, man, I would like to have that thing. And I thought, who the hell would have this?
Well, you know.
Well, now you know.
The, you know, there's these videos on YouTube that come out every now and then. And it's where they expose young kids to old technology to see, I think there's one this week about, you know, how kids react to Windows 95 or whatever. But there was one, maybe a year or two ago where they exposed kids to a rotary phone, just like a regular house phone, you know, the ones that like you right. and I had when we were kids. They not only do they not know how to dial or do anything, but they had no idea. I mean, when they played the sound of a busy signal to them, they had no idea what the busy signal was. They had no idea what a dial tone was. Kids just hadn't, you know, heard a dial tone. And it just seems so I know that when I was young and my dad would say things like, you know, when I was a kid and I just didn't understand that gap of time. Like, it doesn't seem like it's been that long since we were young, but there's so many parts. I mean, of the 80s and 90s that, I mean, our kids will never know. Our kids.
Yeah. There's a lot of big gaps.
Oh, my parents literally would send me out, you know, make sure you have a quarter or 50 cents, you know, in case you have problems and you know, find a payphone and call us. Like you'll never say that to your kids.
No, I'll say, can you use your ringer on before you leave?
be sure to stay where you have, you know, cellular coverage.
Oh, I get so mad. You know, it's like we got my 14-year-old like a prepaid mm-hmm. Smartphone type thing. It's nothing great, and he lets us know that. But I mean, really, the point wasn't for him to play games on it. It was so that we could get a hold of him and he could right. you know, text with his buddies or whatever. And I swear, half the time he doesn't have his ringer on.
Well, both of my kids have smartphones, and my daughter. One day last week, she has a 3 gig plan for data, and she must have been, well, she was at her friend's house and probably thought she was on wireless and just forgot and wasn't. And so I start getting these texts on my phone. You've hit 75% of your usage. And then right after that, you've hit 90% of your usage. And then you get the next one that says you've hit 100% of your usage. And an additional 5 gig has been added for $10. I'm like, and I'm sitting there trying to call her like, what, turn off YouTube or whatever they're doing, you know? So
yeah. Unfortunately, it's not another 5 gigs for $10. Usually it's usually $15 for another like 30 megs or something. They like totally rip you off.
God, yeah. So,
cause I've come close, like very rarely in a situation where my Wi-Fi got turned off by an accident. Yeah. You know, and then I was on it and everything. But
our kids will not know the pain of having to find a payphone if you're running late, you know, or if you, God forbid, you had a. I mean, I remember one time my car, like I was on the way to school in the morning, and my car ran out of gas, and of course I had to, you know, walk all the way down to 7-Eleven and then get some change out of my center console and call my dad to come bring me some gas, you know.
Oh, yeah, I did that before. And then my mother came with a gas can with gas, but the gas can didn't have a long spout on it. So I had to use my finger to depress, you know, how the gas tank has like the little flapper, mm-hmm. kind of like a check valve type right. thing. I had to stick my finger in there and hold it while she poured gas in because it was doing me no good. There wasn't a long end on it, so it wouldn't depress that check valve to pour the gas in. So I had to stick my finger in it. It was dark. I couldn't find a stick anywhere. I didn't have a flashlight, and I was just like, oh, I just want to get home.
You know, I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know about your dad. Like, my dad, like when I was a kid, I thought my dad's the toughest person I know. You know what I mean? Like, yep. And I don't feel like I grew into that role. Like, I don't feel like I'm the toughest person anybody knows. You know what I mean? And I remember my dad would, you know, be out working on his car or whatever. And when he was done, like all the tools would have, you know, grease or oil on them and his hands would have it. And he would go over and get the little gas can, and, like splash gas on his hands. Like
clean them
off. Yeah, wash his hands with gas or whatever. And I did that one time, and my like the cuticles on my nails burned.
Your
for like
hangnail started burning,
and I was like, oh, and I'm running around like, oh, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not the toughest person. I'm not the toughest person in this house.
Oh, that's funny. Man.
Well,
that's too funny.
Well, you got anything else about war games to throw in there?
I don't, man. And I just got to add in, this is totally not related to the movie, but it is related to recording this podcast. It is like, I mean, for you, it's probably not warm, but it's like 70 something degrees here and I have all the windows shut. It is so damn hot in this room. I feel like I'm in a server room, dude. It is so hot here in Buffalo.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think it was 82 here today, but, you know, here's another thing. You know, we were talking about dads being tough or whatever. Like, my dad prides himself every year on how long he can go until he turns on the air conditioner. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he has to make it till at least Memorial Day. And sometimes it'll be, you know, first week of June or whatever. We turned ours on like right after spring break, like right in March.
Well, you know, I see we don't have central air. I have to put the window units in. Mm. So I put it off just because I don't want to climb in the attic and then have to put them in. But when it comes to like the fall and turning the heat on, like I know guys like that, they're like, I don't turn the heat on until December 1st. No, screw that. I don't care if it's September 1st or, you know, August 1st. If it's cold, I'm turning it on. I'm not trying to act tough.
You know, we signed up for this thing. Our heat and air company has OG&E. They have what they call a smart thermostat. And so you could go in and program like, okay, well, I'll go to work. So during the day, make it hotter. You know what I mean? So you'll save money. And then when you come home, it cools down. So it's like, you know, you program your thermostat. But I work from home all the time, but I didn't pay attention. I don't know how to reprogram it. So, I mean, so he's got it where it like sets to 75 during the day. So during the day, I'm like cooking and I can't, you know, when I was 12, I was the War Games kid. I was dialing into Pizza Hut trying to get free pizza. Now I'm 42.
Can't turn the heat down.
I can't figure out my own thermostat. I have to get the kids to program it for me. You know, someday we're our generation's, you know, whatever the equivalent of the flashing clock on the VCR, that'll be us someday.
Ethan, can you come over and set Daddy's DVR to record my program, please?
Man, my kid, about once a week, once every other week, something like that, we have packages show up all the time from Amazon. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I got this gift card, but I translated it to Walmart card and the Walmart cash. You can use this on Google. And I did this and I ordered this on Amazon. I mean, he's ordering stuff all the time. And my wife's like, what's he ordering? I'm like, I don't know. I just see packages like coming in and I don't know where he gets the money at. You know, he's probably doing some War Game stuff in there that I don't even know about, you know?
And you're in the next room.
I know, I'm sitting right here, you know, but the kid, that's how it is. It's the young kids. They own the future.
Yeah. Well, that's all I have for this movie. This is where I go, this movie is shit and I'll never watch it again. But, I like this movie. I definitely like this movie. It's one that if it's on, I'll totally watch it.
Yeah. Yep. It's, there's so many good parts. You know, that the kind of the end, that whole part where they go to Falcon's Island or whatever, it kind of drags in that point, you know, and then at the end it picks right back up. So, you know, if you got to take a bathroom break, that's a good time to stretch.
And my kids, they kind of like drifted in and out of the room yesterday and they would get stuck and, you know, so I thought, well, maybe I can watch it with them someday or something.
Yeah. But, well, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, it's not action. Like, I mean, when they're launching the thing, you're looking at a computer screen. So it's not, you know, like guns going off and things like that. So it's a different kind of movie, you know, and it might be tough for younger kids, you know, to hold their attention, but I don't think there's anything really inappropriate for kids. No. And it's just, they might not hold their interest.
No, other than the security guard, like almost molesting the girl at the desk. This is like prior to, you know, sexual harassment in the workplace. Yeah. I mean, but, no, it was a good movie. I'll probably watch it again. Man, I'm in glad the you liked library.
It was a good, I mean, I, like I said, big influence on me as a kid. And, I watched it a couple of days ago. I would watch it. I mean, you know, anytime. It's definitely, you know, that kind of comfort food and people every now and then, I don't know. It's hard now. there are things people pick apart the technology and stuff in it, but it was a movie of the time. You know what I mean? So,
yep.
So that was just how it was. But, yeah, well, now we got to pick something else to watch.
Yeah. Well, we have, 2 months to figure that out.
We'll do Love Boat Part 2.
Yeah. But, we'll see when our schedules can meet up again. I think now with you out of school and, I should have some more free time coming up, I think, but, we'll figure something out. We'll figure something out. Get something out.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, dude, it was, good doing another episode. It was kind of, on a whim, but we knew we were going to do this movie, but I kind of just got a hold of you go, hey, let's just do this tomorrow. You're like, all right. So there it is. But yeah, good times doing this again. And if anybody wants to get a hold of us, we're all over the place. We're on Twitter, Throwback Review, which I say this every time, like it's, it's very misleading. It's all my running stuff for the most part. So, if you're looking for war game tweets and you're like, yeah, I just ran 13.5 miles. Yeah, I apologize. It's kind of like my personal Twitter, but we're also on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. The Throwback Reviews Podcast Facebook page. We're also part of the Throwback Network, the network that I gotta say, pretty much Rob runs. he does all the computer stuff and website stuff, but it seems that you've got it all pretty much, kind of squared away now as far as how easy it is for you to maintain some of the stuff, or is that not correct?
Well, it's all running off the Whopper. So we got it all punched in. I go in and go out in the garage and make sure the lights are all flashing, the red lights. There's a number counting down. It says something about ready to throw back, launch some missiles. I don't know what that's all about. I guess I'll find out. and we got that new, we have a Throwback Network Facebook group.
Group. Okay.
Yeah. So, people can go in there and you can, if you do a podcast on Throwback Network, you could go in there and plug your shows. And if you're a fan of the network, go on there and just like it. And, I'll add you to the group and you can talk to any of the people that do shows and everybody's on there. And, you can leave feedback about our show or specific episodes or whatever. It's a great place to go and just hang out with everybody. It's a kind of a big, just one big community. So that's been pretty cool.
Very cool. And you put that together. So thanks for doing that. Yeah. Yeah, the network is just constantly growing. I mean, there's so many shows on there, so much good stuff on there. It's a good thing. I like it. I think it's a good central location for people to find other, retro themed podcasts. There's so many on there that you may not have heard of, and then you go there because you hear one of the other shows plug the network. You head over there and find a good show. So
that's the only bad thing about me being out of school now is. I was driving to school 3 days a week and it was an hour each way. So that was 6 hours a week that I was getting some heavy podcast listening time in. And, now that I'm out of school for the summer, I'm like, I'm like behind on all my shows. I got to go get caught up on everything.
I get like that too. If I'm on vacation or something from work, cause I only really listen to podcasts at work. So when I would go on vacation or something, it just, I'm constantly playing catch up.
Right.
So, but anyways, if you guys want to contact the show, you can send us a voicemail, 716-243-2709. Or you can email us, feedback@throwbackreviews.com. So, Rob, that's all I got, man.
That's all I got. I think we should go play a nice game of chess.
Yeah. I think tic-tac-toe would be more. Just let me win.
All right. I get to go first.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, guys, that is going to wrap up this episode. Thanks for sticking around with us and being patient with these episodes. I know they don't, we always say we're going to get them out more often, but it's really just, life gets carried away at times and, it's just something that we're going to try to get out. We're going to try to get them out every month, so we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, until next time, we appreciate all the downloads, all the support we get. If you can, go over to iTunes, give us a review, and subscribe to our podcast. Other than that, that's going to wrap this up. So thanks for listening, guys. you'd like to contact the show, you can send us an email at feedback@throwbackreviews.com or leave us a message on our voicemail at 716-243-2709. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/throwbackreviewspodcast and Twitter at throwbackreview. And don't forget, we're also part of the Throwback Network. Go to throwbacknetwork.net to find more retro podcasts.